Hey, everybody, before we get started today, I've got an announcement of a giveaway that we're doing. You can win a whole bunch of cool stuff, which we actually got in the studio here recently, from Factory Entertainment, which is a company that does licensed products, like a lot of plushies and prop replicas and things like that. We actually did a mailbag video that's up on our website right now where you can spy a lot of these things, such as Direwolf Cub plush sets. They also have Three-Eyed Raven plush, which is pretty cool.
Pretty cool.
A Drogon plush, which Aaron has on his mic for all you club members.
Yeah, it's perched up on my mic stand.
And then they have some really big ticket items they're giving away. They've got a Red Keep relief sculpture, which is kind of a... I think it would make a great belt buckle. Like if you took that thing and attached it to a belt, like a big-ass belt buckle right on your... your belt there. That'd be
if
good.
If you're a geek in Texas,
that
would be freaking sweet.
And a pair of like dragon skin boots. Perfect. They're also giving away a Winterfell desktop sculpture, which we have in that mailbag video.
Like a foot and a half wide by like 8 inches or long by eight inches wide, and it's weighs a ton.
Substantial.
It would be really awesome on your desk.
The other thing that's substantial is this Royal Crown of Baratheon and Lannister prop replica that they're giving away. But it's solid. I mean, it's cast in metal. And then they have some throw pillows with the house sigils that they're giving away and the house words on the back there. And finally, a George R. R. Martin talking plush. And they recorded a bunch of lines with George, like 10 different ones, I think. So if you want to get your entry in and have a chance to win any of that stuff, you can go to factoryent.baldmove.com. There'll be a form there that you can sign up with. And also, as a special bonus, they've given us a coupon code for 15% off for all of the Bald Move listeners. The coupon code is Drogon. So you go to that same site, factoryent.baldmove.com. It'll take you right out of their website in the Game of Thrones section. And you can get 15% off most of the Game of Thrones stuff. The only exclusions are that crown prop replica and the San Diego Comic-Con 2016 stuff.
This podcast contains information, theories, and speculation based on the A Song of Ice and Fire novels by George R.R. Martin. It can and will spoil future episodes of the HBO television series Game of Thrones. This is your one and only spoiler warning. If you're looking for our non-spoiler podcast on Game of Thrones, please look in our feed archives for our Sunday night instant take and Tuesday afternoon full podcasts, or go to baldmove.com for our entire catalog. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast brought to you by Bald Move. This is the spoiler edition. This is for episode also 508, no one.
Not 5, 6.
608,
yep.
Jesus.
You're a year behind.
And a dollar late. I think that's how the phrase goes.
It is, yeah.
So let's get started. Do you want to get meta? Do you want to get meta about the spoiler podcast, Jim?
Meta? Okay.
Yeah, because I was bitching and moaning with my disappointment over the Arya stuff and the complete crapping out of the Clegane Bowl and likely crapping out of the Lady Stoneheart and talk about, like, you know, what's the use? And Matt P. wrote in and said, I agree with your assessment of the spoiler cast. By no means do I want to criticize what you do, so please don't take it that way, because I greatly appreciate and respect what you, blah, blah, blah. But it kind of reminds me of your True Detective Season 2 podcast, where every week you guys would beat the material to death. I would say that we beat it the appropriate amount. To find all kinds of potential twists and turns and themes, but at the end you're just like, you know what, maybe the show is what it is, which is a simple plot, and we spent hours and hours speculating on stuff that hasn't even been in the same ballpark. Between Dorne, the Iron Islands, and Arya, the show writers have proved their plots are a patchwork and full of holes and not very intriguing, much less full of twists and turns that have to do with the deep materials of the writing of G.R.R.M. I think the best way to approach the spoiler cast is within the realm of the show without too much reference to the books, because the show has moved on as its own organism. Jim,
I don't know that I agree with that last part, for sure. I mean, the spoiler cast traditionally has been the books, so when the books need to be touched on, I think we need to go into the books.
Yeah.
Right?
And it's entirely possible, if not likely, that we'll get the Winds of Winter before the next season.
Yeah.
Which will blow the lid off all kinds of things.
But I think he's right in that it does feel a lot like our Season 2 True Detective coverage in that the beginning part of it was excellent and amazing in just about every way you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into season two of True Detective or non-bookland of Game of Thrones, and shit starts to fall apart.
The thing is, like, we have to separate between shit falling apart, like, you know, I'm not going to get into it because the 5% of fans that appreciated Arya's plotline were not happy with our dwelling upon it.
Right.
But, you know, you got to separate the what's essentially bad, you know, storytelling versus just our expectations that were maybe based on wishful thinking and some book evidence and things that could be interpreted multiple ways just not coming true. Like,
sure.
Clegane Bowl. Clegane Bowl.
That's a good place to start.
But that's like, that's weird because that's a half right prediction. The Hound did come back. The Gravedigger theory was essentially true. The add on theory to that is what is fucked up. And then, you know.
But that's the thing that everybody was hyped about.
Sure. Like R plus L equals J, something that, can you believe we still haven't got confirmation? Like,
of the Tower of Joy?
The head of steam we had, like, in episode three, and we're like, this is where I think, you know, and I didn't read a lot of this, but there's a lot of people saying that this kind of season has been surprisingly on a treadmill, that there's a lot of apparent motion, but there's not a lot of actually moving the plot forward. There's a lot of stalling, essentially, which I guess seems true, but it's surprising. But
I don't know. I mean, what if they only consider plot movement like stuff directly related to the Wall or Iron Throne? Like,
yeah.
Then what the fuck?
Sure.
What do you want? Just season six
like character
to end it all?
Development is valid as well. Yeah. But to the extent that, like, you know, Sansa, like, let's posit that Sansa trusts Littlefinger and it goes badly for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially a treadmill for her because, you know, we had the, Sansa's got her Black Raven outfit on and she's been schooled by Littlefinger and she's going to be this smart and cunning. And then she just gets completely waylaid by Ramsay's plotline.
Yeah.
Then she comes out and, she's got the direwolf on her chest and she's, you know, and she's confident and she's powerful and she's talking her brother into doing things that are crazy and then she goes and trusts Littlefinger again. Like, if that comes to pass, and I'm not sure exactly how that's going to come to pass or how it's going to work out, you could arguably say that her character development is a bit on a treadmill.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Treadmill carries a negative connotation to me, and I guess that's how people mean it, but I guess I don't see so much of a treadmill as I see some slow motion here. You know, things are still moving forward. It's not like we're completely standing still. We're showing how characters can think they're in a position that they aren't actually in, or think they have advantages that they don't actually have, and act on that, and that gets them in trouble.
Is it fair to say that it's a bit inelegant, though? Because, like, if you don't want to say treadmill, because, like, I don't think it's as bad as, like, The Walking Dead gets at the time, where, like, Rick literally goes back between, we have to trust people, we have to kill everyone, we can only trust, we have to trust people, you know, I'm going to be a gun farmer, I'm going to be a warlord.
Other characters pick up that torch for him and say the same thing over again.
Yes, it's a real circle jerk. I don't think it's got that bad, but I do feel like that there could have been streamlining, which makes me wonder whether the Double D's are kind of as bummed out as we are that they haven't gotten a new book. Like, when they sign up with this deal with George Martin, it's like, hey, Dance of Dragons is going to be out, like, next year, which it did. And then, you know, Martin was always saying, like, this is the real thing. Once I get past Feasts and Dance, it's going to be smooth sailing to the end.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that they signed up to fucking make shit up. Like, I feel, and that's the thing. Like, I've always had the theory that they're legit fans of the source material and they were jazzed about it and they went to Martin and said, we want to adapt your material. I don't think they went to Martin and said, we want to adapt half your shit and then wander in the wilderness and try to.
Right. For as much as it sucks for the fans, imagine their position.
Because, like, they really are in an impossible position.
Right.
I don't know. We're going to talk about more of that at the end of the show. But I guess even if, like, only 10% of the stuff we speculate comes true. Number one, it seems like that's what's fun to talk about as a fan. And yeah, there's some disappointment, but hopefully when things don't come, you know, the way that you want it to, it's better. Or like it's a unique take. It's not something that's just disappointing. And I guess you could argue that by speculating, you're setting yourself up for that. But
I suppose
it does seem like that's what the fandom wants to do, and that's what's fun, and that's essentially what that's the reason I started doing the spoiler podcast almost 3 years ago, because I was getting addicted to that kind of stuff. And in lieu of new information coming out, you know, you try to put this jigsaw puzzle together. Mm-hmm. And there has been notable successes. Again, you know, Sandor is alive. R plus L equals J looks like it's going to come true.
Yeah, I'd say it's a lock at this point.
Yeah, to the point where if it's not, you start to really wonder what the hell you're doing here.
Right.
So I
don't think the wheels have come off of this thing. It's more like my car, where the air conditioning has failed, and it's midsummer.
Sure.
Winter's not coming for a long while.
No.
You know, cruise control doesn't work, that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But the wheels are still going,
yeah.
I think.
And that's the thing, like, I feel like this last episode has really left a sour taste in her mouth, because I kind of feel like this is one of the better seasons, but it feels like it got derailed last episode. Now it could come roaring back with a really satisfying Battle of the Bastards.
It feels like it's going to.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of expectations for how that goes down.
Yeah.
So that seems to be just default a home run for me.
Yeah. I mean, I still think it's on the whole better than last season, which wasn't a terrible season of television.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of our thoughts. Like, you know, we, even if it might get us in trouble, it's fun in the moment to speculate. So it's like chasing a heroin high. You know it's probably never going to be as good as R plus L equals J, but god damn it, you're going to try, because when the stuff comes together, it feels real good.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yeah.
Scott from Laguna Beach, California says, "The Hound whipped out his dick and pissed in the river where Catelyn was thrown into. D&D and the Hound has literally pissed on the Lady Stoneheart plot. That is some top shelf flipping of the middle finger to book readers. And was, dare I say it, worth not getting Lady Stoneheart for."
Okay.
You know, that's the thing. When he went over to the water's edge, I'm like, holy shit, if he finds the corpse,
she's going to reach out like a crocodile or an alligator and snap him up?
Well, I mean, like, it was looking like it was coming, but then it's like, well, but Edmure said he's been in there for years. Like, how the fuck is she still floating in this river? And then when he started just pissing in it, I'm like, I immediately made that connection. Like, Lady Stoneheart is being pissed on. Do you think the Double D's intended it as such?
I don't. Tell me why the Lady Stoneheart theory is dead. Because you
because she's been dead for years. Like in the so
right,
in the books,
in
the books, days after the Red Wedding, Nymeria in a war dream that Arya is having, as I believe she's struck blind by in the House of Black and White, Nymeria finds this corpse and like grabs its jaw, its head and its jaws and drags it out of the river, and then I believe hears like torches and men coming, so she vamoses.
Fine.
And then Beric Dondarrion sees Catelyn Stark, and for some reason, I'm not even sure why, he decides to give her the kiss of life. She comes back to life in a horrifying fashion, because she's been dead for days. Her face is waterlogged.
Yeah.
Her face is torn to ribbons where she scratched it. She's got a gash in her throat, etc. And she looks a mess. And then she takes over the, because there's a power vacuum now at the Brotherhood of Banners, she takes them over and turns them far more cruelly into no longer protecting the small folk, but getting vengeance for on the Boltons and the Freys. So,
okay.
I guess I don't see how Lady Stoneheart can survive, because she's been dead for years. Like, if they brought her back at this point, it'd have to be like a skeleton.
But aren't you assuming that that hasn't already happened?
Well,
years
so
ago,
you're right. In which case, I have to ask, why did we not see her? You know, why is Beric still? I mean, I guess that
she
Thor's
sent him
just
out to find these fools who were saying,
yeah,
"Hey, we're the Brotherhood and doing nasty things to innocent people." I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
I think it's still a possibility. I don't know why people are proclaiming it dead.
Yeah, I guess just because the assumption is that we would see her be brought back to life.
I
or there would
guess
be a big reveal, and this
right,
would have been a good episode to reveal her. And they didn't.
Well, they could be setting up that reveal with, yeah, like a flashback next episode or something.
Well, you're on kind of a track. Because I was going to skip the Dylan's email. It said, after a divisive and terribly written episode of Game of Thrones this past week, there's been much tinfoil and hype slaying. However, I think one tinfoil has survived the D&D onslaught. Lady Stoneheart.
Okay, good.
Still on the table because, one, in the show, Thuros of Myr is the character that gives the breath of life to Beric, and Martin's razor may dictate that he would also be the one to give rise to Kat to avoid confusion for the TV-only folk, which seems reasonable. And more importantly, the Brotherhood Without Banners, Beric, I believe, specifically states in this episode that the Brotherhood Without Banners have a thing about hanging people. They prevent disemboweling or bloodshed and are dead set on hanging limb and company. Who else has an obsession with hanging? Lady Stoneheart, of course. Previous to this, the Brotherhood Without Banners seemed to settle their gripes with trials by combat and straight-up killing. Why the change of Stoneheart all of a sudden? I believe Lady Stoneheart lives and will be revealed. Thoris is the one to give her life, and she commands the Brotherhood Without Banners from a secret location. It's possible. I'm just not capable of the hype that I was aspiring to a few weeks ago.
Okay, that's fine.
But I guess, would I be surprised if she rasps her way onto the screen in the final episode? But I feel like... I feel like I predicted the reveal of Lady Stoneheart at the end of seasons 3, 4, and 5. So, damn me if I'm going to do it for season 6. And it would be hilarious. I mean, because...
Can I predict it? I'll predict it.
That's fine.
Season 6. End of season 6, Lady Stoneheart reveal.
Let the noob predict Lady Stoneheart. But, I mean, there's so many references to her getting her throat slit by so many characters and so many people talking about her. It does seem like it was building up to that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Caitlin T. says, I feel like the Double D's have hyped us all up for fan theories like the Clegane Bowl and the introduction of Lady Stoneheart, only to shut it down this episode.
Wait, is this actually Caitlin Tully?
No. I mean... Prove her wrong, I guess.
Okay.
It looks like it's Caitlin, not Catlin.
Okay. Pseudonym.
Yeah, true.
It's a good disguise.
Stoneheart.
Maiden name and just a slight variation on your first.
All seasons there's been references to Lady Catlin, the Red Wedding, the intro to the Hound still being alive, including the Brotherhood of that banner is now, only to show us that, A, Cersei will not, in fact, be able to demand trial by combat, which when paired with Bran's vision of Wildfire, Jaime's comment about Cersei being willing to turn cities to ash, which we didn't talk about in the main podcast, for her children and her much more rumor talk with Qyburn, I really think it means Cersei's going to take the wildfire underneath the city and burn it down. So she agrees with you. So unless the Faith changes its mind on the whole trial by combat, which seems unlikely, there's going to be no Clegane Bowl, at least not for Cersei's trial. The Hound's conversation with the Brother to that Banners made it sound like he would be going north and not south, so what's the purpose of his return if not to defeat his brother? I mean... Here's where I gotta pump the brakes, because just because we were wrong on the Clegane Bowl and because there was some nice symmetry and that would make certain amount of sense for who the Hound was, doesn't mean that a lot of people have been saying that, you know, the Clegane Bowl sounds cool, but it's actually kind of a betrayal of Sandor's arc. Like, that would make him just as bitter and revenge obsessed as he was in the first season. And everything he's been through has been trying to show him the futility of vengeance and eye for eye and this, you know, just trying to act out with mindless rage, which I always hear, but on the other hand, Clegane Bowl. So this is where it's like, I don't know that the Double D's are actually fucking things up, or even if you want to say Martin is fucking things up, because I don't think that there's any way... If Martin writes it as the Clegane Bowl, that the Double D's just wouldn't set those, you know, dominoes up and knock them down.
Right.
So I feel like that's just our fan thinking, and that it's entirely possible that Sandor as the hero of the Wall or the hero of the Bastard Bowl could be just as cool and maybe better from a overall character arc standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not ready to get, like... super pissed about that at this juncture. She continues, the Brother of Banner mentioned the Lord of Light bringing back Beric, but made no mention of Lady Stoneheart. It seems Beric really is their leader, and they find their purpose in whatever reason the Lord of Light has chosen to keep them alive for. If we haven't seen Lady Stoneheart through all this, is there any reason to expect or hope for her at all? I already talked about Dylan's email, so yes, there is hope. I'm not going to carry that torch.
Yeah, I will.
I'll let Jim carry it.
I'm a fan of zombies, so bring her back.
The grodier, the better. So her being dead for a couple years, no deterrence for you. Nick S., this is my take on the Blackfish events from the last night's episode. Either he's a victim of this terrible episode in an otherwise incredible season, or he's still alive. Let's start with the origin of his name. After constant bickering with his older brother, Hoster, for doing things which contradicted his duty to his family, which that's the Tully's word, duty, family, honor, he earned the title of Blackfish for becoming... I might have screwed up that last one. If so, I'll probably get lumps for it. He earned the title of Blackfish for becoming the Blackfish of the Tully School. He truly only had great admiration for Catelyn and Liza in his family, and eventually moved away with Liza to the Eyrie, not returning to his home until the books events of books season 2. He puts the family he's close to instead of the one instead of for just purposes of loyalty. After he escaped the Red Wedding, he returned to Riverrun to retake the castle and fly the Stark flag. Not the Tully flag, the Stark flag. Hmm. He kept Robb's Rebellion alive because he wanted vengeance for the Red Wedding. He doesn't hide his contempt for Edmure, and he refuses to let him back into Riverrun until the guards open the gate at Edmure's request. So why then would the Blackfish suddenly decide to fight one last battle to the death in the castle that he really hasn't cared about in decades from men who just threw him aside? Poorly established motives? Or an excuse to somehow follow Brienne and find out if this woman he just met is actually telling her the truth and the daughter of his beloved niece is indeed alive. Given the choice between dying in Riverrun during a pointless last stand or going to support family that he cares about to seek revenge, the latter makes so much more sense. The biggest problem is they don't show him die. That's a big omission for a series where time and time again, no proof of death usually means a person is still alive. It's also very plausible that a castle full of people who despise the Freys and Lannisters, he found the way to fake his death. The quote from the guard is, "We found the Blackfish and not we killed the Blackfish." Although I will...
No, he died fighting.
He died fighting, my lord, is the rest of
is
that
the
quote.
Actual quote. And who the fuck is insane enough to lie to Jaime Lannister's face?
Especially a Lannister guard.
When it's easily provable. Where's his body? Show me his body.
Sure.
Oh, what? Did
I
you
just
eat it?
Met
did
the Blackfish. He gave me a face full of shit.
Uh-huh.
Show me his body.
Like, the concept that this guy lied to Jaime Lannister about the status of the Blackfish, to me, is inconceivable.
Finally, if his fate really is a meaningless off-screen death, why introduce him at all? Why not Martin Razor him? I mean, I don't. Because I don't know that... The Double D's knew enough in season 3 to make that call.
Okay.
Like, I really do think that they were thinking, like we all were, that the Winds of Winter was 2 or 3 seasons away, and by the time they got here, that, you know, why did Martin introduce him? I mean, what is... You know, there's this whole theory about what the Blackfish is off doing. He's rejoined Lady Stoneheart, and he's trying to muster the Riverlands to join this great Northern conspiracy to put Jon Snow on the throne, or on the King of the North throne, anyway. But I don't, you know, that's just speculation, man.
Sure.
That could be Clegane Bowl hype.
Yeah.
So
that's the status of the Blackfish? He's kind of just... out there doing a thing.
So in the books, when Edmure surrendered to Castle, there's eyewitness reports of the Blackfish jumping into the river and that they left the portcullis, what are they called those?
Yeah,
you know, the big iron bars.
Portcullis, sure.
Those go all the way through the riverbed in the books. And they had put that up like a half just so you could sneak under like 3 foot above the riverbed. And he's like a good swimmer, et cetera, et cetera. So that a lot of people think that he just escaped to fight another day.
Okay. That's interesting.
Right. But then there's this whole other Grand Northern conspiracy plot about how everybody's conspiring to... everyone who was a Robb supporter is essentially conspiring to put a Stark back in Winterfell.
Mm-hmm.
And raise them up as the King of the North again to get epic revenge on the Freys and the Boltons. So that's the thing.
Right. And I don't want to argue too much with the idea that maybe, like, look, I don't know enough about the Blackfish and his history and story to say for sure, even though she lays out some of it there. So maybe you're right about, Nick.
Thinking, yeah.
Okay, sorry.
We switched from Catelyn to Nick.
maybe you're right about it making a little more sense for his character, but I don't see it. happening.
I do think him dying
in the show,
and that's the thing. If they wanted to show him escaping, they could have just shown him escaping. He could have gotten a boat with Brienne. He could have been like, "I've got my own path to follow," and that's a, and then they could have had not had. They could have had the soldier report, "My lord, there's been no sighting the Blackfish within the castle."
Right, or so, if they wanted to leave it ambiguous, just don't have the scene where he tells Jaime we killed him.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, it is a bit what the fuck, but on the other hand, it's kind of consistent with his character as seen on the show, and if right. they've gotten updated yeah. notes and the latest copies of the, you know, in work version of The Winds of Winter and his notes for A Dream of Spring, maybe they realize that even if he's doing the Grand Northern Conspiracy, if they're not going to do Lady Stoneheart, then it's now's the time to just have him go out.
Yeah.
And someone pointed out that the actor himself is like 71, which might not lend it to too many stunt scenes.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
He's looking pretty good for 71.
Yeah. Not bad.
Jesus.
But the other thing is that Barristan Selmy was pretty old, too. I don't know if the actor was that old, but I feel like with stunt coordination today and the fact that they put Cersei's head on a different nude woman's body,
right,
you can do a lot. Like, Christopher Lee didn't do any of his own stunts in any of the Star Wars. That right. was all digital compositing and stunt work. And, like, if they wanted to have the Blackfish go out in a blaze of glory,
neither
the fact
did
that
Yoda.
The actor... Yeah.
Good Yoda point. Had a stunt double.
Good point. They could have done it if they wanted to.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they don't have unlimited budgets, et cetera, but, I mean, they could have just had... He said he was an old man, and I'm probably going to be shit at this. He could have just,
yeah.
you know, taken a swing at him and just gotten stabbed a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other question is, why, I guess, didn't... If Jaime said to take him alive, why did they let a 71-year-old man die in combat? Like, just... You know, take yeah. your shields and surround him and take a sword from him and put him in chains. And
yeah,
like you don't have to fight him to the death, man.
I don't know. I mean, if somebody's hell bent on fighting you to the death, do you think you could stop him?
If you
I mean,
have,
a whole army
if you
of people,
plate armor
probably.
And shields. And yeah, I'd like my chances again, you know, especially if Jaime, if, you know, as you say, fucking Jaime Lannister told me to take him alive.
Yeah.
I'm surprised Jaime didn't get, you know, wasn't pissed at the guy who gave him the bad news. Like, how did you let this happen?
Yeah.
Anyway, Tim S., continuing on. You guys may have already gone over this in a previous episode and missed it, but with the events happening in the most recent episode and Jaime's ominous statement that Cersei would burn the city to ashes for her children,
mm-hmm.
would you mind going over and discussing the Mad Queen theory on the show? So this is a theory that I wasn't aware of. I wish I had been, but it was developed about 9 months ago on Reddit by a character named Redoubt. And he outlined after Cersei's walk of shame, she is broken and hateful at all of the King's Landing. Joffrey and Marcelle are dead. Tommen is going through puberty and losing control of the city. If Cersei loses the Clegane Bowl, that could set her off and make her mission to destroy King's Landing. It's already swung and missed at Clegane Bowl, it seems like. One of the ways she can do this is by using Wildfyre. King Aerys, the Mad King, threatened to burn down the city, and Wildfyre was his way of doing it. His Wildfyre bomb didn't go off because Jaime stopped him. With this being said, the bomb is lost in the city. Cersei knows about the Wildfyre and has a pyromancer produce more of it in Seasons 2. If Cersei just loses... she has the power to destroy the city, which also fits well into the storyline of Jaime, who's returning back to King's Landing at the end of Season 5 and would be faced with the same situation as he was with the Mad King, only with the woman he loves instead.
Yeah.
This is also why Daenerys in the House of the Undying walks through the throne room that has just gotten the shit rocked. You know, we've debated about whether that is Ash or Snow, but it's looking more and more like it'll be Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And add that with Christian's email as follows... With the last episode, the Clegane Bowl has moved further away. One of the pillars of the Clegane Bowl theory was that if the Hound is the Valonqar, the prophesied by Maggie the frog, or is it Maggie the witch? Maggie the frog. That's an old Valyrian word for younger brother. Anyway, the Valonqar, the younger brother, Maggie the Frog's prophecy stated that the Valonqar will be Cersei's downfall. Top candidates being the Valonqar were, up to this date, Tyrion, Jaime, and the Hound. Tyrion is an Essos. Jaime states that he loves Cersei, and the Hound is lollygagging with the Brotherhood. Do you think it's time to discuss if the Valonqar may indeed be Tommen, who is also a younger brother to Joffrey and Marcella? So the Mad Queen is essentially your theory.
Right.
But it started being developed about 9 months ago on Reddit.
Hmm.
It does have the appeal of Jamie foreshadowing it with that she'll gladly turn cities to ash.
Yeah.
To protect her children. It also has a symmetry where if Jamie returns to King Landing, because he says, as soon as I pacify River Run,
yeah,
I want to get back to my sister because she needs me. So he could be here for this trial. He could realize what's going on, and he himself could strangle her. Jamie is, of course, yeah, the younger brother. He was born, I think they said that he was grasping Cersei's heel.
Okay.
Kind of like an Isaac and slightly Esau younger moment.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's slightly younger. He's technically the Valonqar. That would be interesting if Jamie has to essentially put down another toasting of King's Landing.
Yeah.
But we also know that Bran foresaw the fire and Dany foresaw that the King's Landing was turned to ash.
Right. He might be too late. I don't know. It is. Man, that's a real bummer for Jamie. Real bummer. Bummer city.
I mean, could we be headed to a situation where everyone in King's Landing of note is dead?
Yeah. I don't see why not.
Which then, and the Bastard Bowl is resolved, we think, in Jon's favor.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be enough to unite the kingdom to face the... I mean, that could really accelerate the White Walker threat. I mean, then you got Dany coming over. Like, it does feel like that this stuff could converge pretty quickly.
Yeah, it feels like it.
And with a season and a half of material left, it's going to have to.
I'm gonna say Dany's still a ways away from Westeros. I mean, she's got her own battle to fight here against these slavers.
She's got the dragons. She's got the Unsullied. Right. She's got the Dothraki. Like, there's some cleanup to be done, but I don't think she fails to hold on to Meereen.
No. I don't think so either. But like you said, I think there's cleanup. I think it's going to be next season before she even heads over. Yeah.
Oof. I kind of stand by my thought that, I mean, I don't know, I have to see the last two episodes, they're going to be super long,
yeah.
But I stand by my thought of, like, if Dany's not actively, like, stepping on the boat to sail for Westeros as it fades to black on the season,
yeah,
I think I'm going to have a problem with that. Because I just don't give a shit about, Dany's, I don't know if she's learned how to be a successful ruler, but she's got Tyrion and Varys for that. She's definitely learned how to be a fucking conqueror.
Yeah.
And she doesn't need any more. She needs ships. But guess what? The Greyjoys are coming. You know, some people said that why would you think that Dany would burn all the Wise Master's ships when she needs ships to get across to... I'm like, okay, yeah, but they're also belching fire on her city.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how... Yeah, peacefully.
And we know Yara's coming. I mean, it's...
That's what I'm
she
saying.
Doesn't, but we do.
Right.
So, yeah. Right. You can't have a dragon land and, like, negotiate.
No.
Guys, don't yeah. shoot the city like, anymore.
I'm going to have to burn
you. I get
you
the
all
fire
alive.
Thing. I like fire yeah. as much as you.
Sure.
But...
I don't know. To me, I still think that they should be able to wrap that up. I don't care about the battle for Meereen. I think it should be a decisive victory. Mm-hmm. All the pieces are in place for me to believe that it'll be a decisive victory. It's like Game of Thrones to like come back next week or the finale episode and just have like smoke rolling through the streets of Meereen, and it's after the battle, and Dany's on her dragon, and she's putting down the last resistance. Like they tend to skip big battles, especially since it doesn't seem they're going to do that with the Battle of the Bastards.
Yeah,
what are the odds we're going to get two big budget battles back to back?
That'd be a way to one up Hardhome, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And especially since you know going forward, it seems like the next two seasons are going to be super expensive because it's going to be essentially set piece battle after set piece battle.
You would think so.
I don't know. But that's kind of my thought.
Yeah.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
We're getting geared up for the 6th Annual Summer Badass Fest.
And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and ball move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of bald movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Brett from Colorado says, I just want to offer up a piece of tinfoil that maybe the High Sparrow will take the throne when Tommen dies. That's why he keeps mentioning the Faith and the Crown are twin pillars. Perhaps the Sparrow is trying to merge them closer, not to invest the Crown with Faith, but to invest the Faith with the Crown. However, this might counter my belief that the High Sparrow is pushing Margaery on Tommen in order to get a Tommen heir before Tommen's demise. So, there's a lot to unpack here, and I know I've been dismissive. We've talked about this a couple weeks ago, about the High Sparrow crowning his own ass as king. But this whole Twin Pillars of Faith that clearly the High Septon has put into his mouth, and Tommen is saying at every opportunity, makes me think that maybe there'll be a push to have one pillar, and maybe he does want, maybe he sees his weakness here, that Tommen, as much as he is as easy as to manipulate, that cuts both ways. That there's situations where Margaery and his mother can get in his ear and he would lose the power.
Yeah.
But if he gets Margaery pregnant and he's able to essentially keep Margaery imprisoned for 9 months until she gives an heir, and the High Septon could raise him as a son, maybe that has appeal to him, because that would kind of unify the two pillars and he would essentially be king. And there would be no challenge to his power because he'd have the rightful king that he's... I mean, I could see that.
Yeah, it feels like a pretty long-term play for a very unstable situation, but you have to have some solution in the long term.
And every movie he's made has been to solidify his power. And again, Tommen, as easily manipulated as he is, he can be easily manipulated by his wife and his mother, so...
Yeah, and I guess it makes me wonder how stable he views his own position. You know, like... He doesn't know about the wildfire, I'm sure. I take that into account when I consider how unstable this whole thing is.
I wonder what he would make of the White Walkers.
Right.
Like, if he were confronted with these abominations, like, would he be like, you know what, we need to stop all this shit and unify our forces to fight them?
Yeah, no, that'd be interesting.
And also, what is that? What would that be like when he is... You know, is he going to ally with Dany and the red priests? Is he going to ally with John and the old gods, like
Or Bran? Like,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah, Bran would, I guess, would be a closer analogy to that. Interesting.
I don't know. I don't think he'll get that opportunity to even consider it.
Yeah, because I think he's going to. I mean, so. Who survives the Great Sept of Baelor going up?
I don't think anybody does. I think Jaime comes back and Cersei, it's just it's everyone's dead.
Because the other thing is remember Cersei was willing to kill her son when she was holed up with the other women during the siege of the Battle of Blackwater. And she had the poison and she was like, I'll protect you, my son. Like, it's entirely within her character to kill herself and her child rather than see them taken in some sort of captivity, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't even think that Cersei needs to be spared. It could just be, like, I've got everyone here that I want to kill, and it will keep my son from being taken from me, so it's time to pull the plug. That means, like, what does that mean for Marjorie? Marjorie could burn to death.
Sure.
Which kind of makes that Rose kind of poignant. Like, I got this, Grandma. Whoosh.
Yeah. I mean, Kevin goes up, I guess. Old Poop Pants McGee, whatever his name is.
Well, there you go. There's the wildfire. He emits wildfire with methane and just...
Oh, man.
It's purple flame.
That's how they make it, actually. It's just it's gasoline and methane.
It's distilled and condensed Picel farts. let's move on to Kellen from Nova Scotia. Are you guys with me in assuming this Battle of the Bastards is going to have a Lord of the Rings-style Battle of Helm's Deep-type ending? Just when all seems lost for the good guys, Gandalf shows up with an army to save the day. In this case, though, we have Littlefinger showing up the Knights of the Vale to ride in and save the day.
Seems like it.
There is...
I don't know that it's actually Littlefinger. It might be Robin. But, yeah, that's what it feels like to me.
Mm. Well, even if it's Robin, Littlefinger's going to be in that mix. Like, are you going on my theory that she didn't write the Littlefinger, she wrote the Robin?
Yeah.
Okay. That's the one I would actually be impressed with Sansa, if she's rolling the dice that I can manipulate my horny teenage cousin.
Uh-huh.
A lot of cousin fucking. A lot of sister brother fucking in this show.
Yep.
It's a different time, a different place. Who are we to judge them with our modern alternate dimensional eyes, Jim?
Well, arguably they're more modern than us. So
what?
If this is Earth, Earth.
Sure, after nuclear war. Yeah. Right. The nuclear war swept away our ideas of incest and
continents, continental shapes.
Emily S. said, to preview this Battle of the Bastards and the dismayed face of Jon Snow has to be a reaction to a horrific thought or sight. My money is on a flayed Rickon. Jesus. Chopping heads off direwolves and now we're flaying little boys. That sounds right, actually.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about Rickon.
I don't either. Like,
don't care. Don't care about Shaggy Dog or Rickon.
I mean, to the extent that it gets an emotional reaction from Sansa and Jon and whips them up into some kind of frenzy, sure. But yeah, I don't. I mean, he's the little shit that was busting nuts at not listening to the Maester and, you know, got his wolf killed. Sam C. said, all right, everyone thinks Littlefinger's going to come to the last minute rescue to save Jon and Sansa, a la Stannis at the Wall, Tywin at the Blackwater, and Gandalf at Helm's Deep. Watch out, Kellen. Shots fired. Why? Because he betrayed Sansa by marrying off to a psycho? Why does Littlefinger care about that? And why would Littlefinger finally play the Knights of the Vale card, which he's held on to tightly since the War of the Five Kings began, just to support the Starks in the North, which directly goes against the House Bolton? What's the strategic advantage of Littlefinger openly rebelling against the Iron Throne just to be what? Warden of the North? Marrying Sansa? I'm confused. Why would Littlefinger suddenly rebel just for Sansa? Good question. Number one, he could have fallen in love with her.
Okay.
Which is kind of icky, but again, sister fucking, cousin fucking.
Yeah, it's within character. You love Catelyn, and that extended to her.
The Littlefinger wants what the Littlefinger wants.
Yep.
So he could be, but that's the thing, like, riding to her rescue, maybe he gets his hand in marriage, and maybe that he at best he gets to be the Warden of the North, but... You know, what are you going to do when the Lannisters come calling and saying, like, what the fuck, man? This is not your apple cart to turn over.
Yeah.
So these are all very good questions. Like, I don't know that Littlefinger does anything for love after he got burnt by the cat situation. I don't know what the percentage is. I don't know where the profit for saving her would be.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. It's interesting because in this battle, I do think if she wrote to Littlefinger and Littlefinger got the message and has the decision to make, do I support the Boltons or do I support the Starks? He's got to understand that the Starks have more loyalty in the North. I don't know. I mean, at the very least, it comes down to his decision to make, right? Like, he can decide, who do I trust more? Who am I going to have an easier time manipulating? Is it going to be Ramsay? Is it going to be John and Sansa? Like, he gets to make that call and choose to support a side.
Yeah.
And probably turn the battle in that case. I mean, I think his guys could turn the battle for or against the Starks here.
Yeah.
It's already kind of against the Starks, but I think he could overcome the Bolton odds. Although if he took all the knights down there.
I don't even know if they need it, because I've always thought that the Northern Lords at best are for Boltons because of the things that Robert Glover said, that, you know, Rob wasn't all that great of a king, and the Starks have kind of lost their luster, and the Boltons have been, you know, making sure the trains run on time and making sure the castles are owned by the right lords. But if Ramsay wheels out a flayed Rickon just to rub Jon Snow's nose in it, I don't know how the Lords of the North take that. That's exactly what Roose was warning him about. Like, you fucking fool. Why? You have victory in your grasp, and now you're going to do something that's going to fracture your own forces. And, you know, we talked about, like, the whole Braveheart, Irish, you know, the Irish, what do you call that? Not recruits, but...
defection?
But they were impressed soldiers, conscripts. The Irish conscripts defecting over to the Braveheart side.
Yeah.
I think you could see that if Ramsay does something crazy like that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Like, they're just so disgusted that they, like, God damn it, we're going to have to back this idiot.
Do you think they don't know... that they know as little about Ramsay as kind of Littlefinger does here? I know some of them know. Like, I think Umber came in and he kind of
Seems like the one guy that walked into this with eyes wide open. Then I guess the Karstarks, too.
Okay, sure. I just wonder, like, Bannermen, the rest of them.
The Glover, all the ones that essentially rejected him last episode, if they're at this battle, too. And it seems like numerically, if they could get all those smaller houses, that they would have kind of a parity. I don't know.
And it would be interesting to see Ramsay's own lust for carnage, lust for flaying people, be his undoing.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
Zach K. said, I think in episode 9 titled Battle of the Bastards, we'll have 3 bastards in battles. I think we'll see the battle in Meereen. I think we'll see Tyrion ride a dragon, confirming him as a bastard of Aerys and Dany's half-brother. So this is the whole Tyrion as a secret Targaryen and a dragon rider theory coming back to us. Yeah. While that could happen, I think that would still be a spoiler cast take up until they lay the framework for people to draw their own. Because I don't know that, like, a show writer, if they see Tyrion riding a dragon, would be like, oh, he must be a fucking Targaryen.
Sure.
It'd be like, well, no. Tyrion drinks, he knows things. He knows how to woo dragons. He's built this relationship with them, so he's going to hop on their back and ride them.
Yeah.
So that would be not confirmation. They would need to do other things to get him to where he'd be the full secret Targaryen thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ross B. said in previous show that the Stark versus Bolton bastards, so that battle definitely seems like it's going down, and I liked what someone said in non-spoiler podcast about the Sand Snakes. When I'm thinking of bastards that we haven't seen in a while, my mind settled on King Robert's bastard, the ever-rowing Gendry.
Okay.
I believe we last left Gendry. He was in the Brotherhood of that Banners and with the Hound meeting up with these guys in the previous episode. Oh, see, that's the problem. He actually was taken from the Brotherhood of that Banners by Melisandre to sacrifice, which Davos didn't like, so Davos stole him out of the cells and put him on a rowboat and told him to row to King's Landing. So we last left him rowing is the problem. But do you think that Gendry might show up?
I'm not going to make any predictions about Gendry.
The only thing I thought is interesting about this is that that's a lot of times speculated that if the High Septon wanted to replace a king, he would do it with Robert. You know, it's like in the trial,
right?
It turns out that this Cersei's, like, it's not just her confessing to fucking Lancel, but, like, the Jaime too. Mm-hmm. That, like, invalidates the entire royal line, which has the High Septon say, oh, we found Robert Baratheon's bastard, and we're going to put him on Iron Throne. I just don't think Gendry would make a good king for the High Septon.
Really? Too strong-willed?
He's Bobby B's kid, man, and he's seen some shit. And he's gone out, and, like, I think he'll have his own fucking ideas of what to do.
Yeah.
So I don't think he'd be easily manipulated any more than Robert was. Well, not in the same ways that Robert was easily. Robert was manipulated with wine and whores and tournaments and war hunts and shit like that. He didn't give. He didn't care about being a king.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe his son will turn out the same. Leela HZ said, I'm in the middle of the 608 non-spoiler podcast, and the subject of sand snakes came up as bastard, but let's not forget that if they battle Tommen, he's a bastard too, making the battle of bastards on both sides. Bastards cube. Bastards quad.
Oh my god.
It's a battle royale of bastards. So yeah, that's a lot more bastards battling than I appreciated in the non-spoiler podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's all the bastard plots we have to talk about. JT Milwaukee wants to talk about Varys. So we're guessing Varys is heading to King's Landing to somewhat fulfill his book plot. What are the chances that instead of ganking Kevin with the crossbow, they change the storyline to the High Sparrow?
Kevin
is the one who's getting King's Landing back on track. However, in the show, perhaps we will have stability because of the Faith of the Seven, and Sparrow is the key to it. So I think we've talked about this. Maybe not.
Maybe?
One of the very last scenes we get in A Dance with Dragons is Varys in disguise. Kevin comes to his quarters and he finds, I believe, Grandmaster Pycelle murdered by the disguised Varys. Mm. And then Varys explaining, he puts a crossbow in his chest and as he's dying saying, look, it's nothing personal. I always thought you were a great man, and that's the problem. You're just too good. You would possibly bring too much stability, and I can't have that for my plans. There still needs to be chaos in the realm. But we're really getting some timey-wimey bullshit, because that happened, like, kind of at the same time that Cersei does her walk of shame, like, just after, and she gets the mountain. Okay. So, like, we've got this thing that's kind of like a Mobius strip folding in on itself.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know that Varys is actually going to do his book plot of murdering Pycelle and Kevin, because if they just all go up in a big wildfire pod, that's not necessary.
And I'm thinking things are already so unstable in King's Landing that he doesn't really need to meddle in that.
What might be happening is some people suggested that this is going to tie the Dorne plot back. Varys is going to be meeting with the Sand Snakes, since they're kind of Targaryen loyalists, that they're sympathetic to the cause, that they might support, like, you know, some military might, that might be like the landing that they kind of start at. He also might talk to Lady Olenna, because they kind of had some dialogue. He might be just what he says. He's trying to sew up some support. So I don't, again, both of these theories can't be true.
Yeah.
If the wildfire burns everybody up, then Varys will have no one to kill. If Varys has people to kill, then the wildfire plot didn't go off. So they're kind of like mutually exclusive.
Seems like it.
And I don't think that Varys, if he was going to go off to murder, you know, Tyrion's uncle and Grandmaster Pycelle, I don't know why he'd be secretive about that.
Yeah.
He'd be like, hey, I'm going to go get your uncle, and I'm going to get that fucker that you wanted to kill anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts, or should we move on?
Let's move on.
Okay, Mary C. from Brooklyn says, since Arya is returning to Westeros, is it possible that she will now reunite with Nymeria? I know the books mention that Nymeria is leading a troop of direwolves, but is there any mention as to what area in Westeros she is in? Yes, in fact, Nymeria is leading these rampaging troop of not direwolves, just wolves. She's the boss bitch leading the other wolves in the Riverlands. I think all Game of Thrones fans would be happy to see Nymeria, since most of the wolves are now gone, and since Arya and Jon are similar to each other, it may provide a nice balance for both of them to still have their wolves. Arya also typically has traveled with someone who is stronger and more capable than she is, i.e. the Hound and Jaqen. Nymeria could be the next replacement. I would love to see Nymeria, because she was dismissed in the first books. She's in the shadows and, you know, doing some warg dreams and pulling out mothers from rivers and killing. There's a couple scenes where Arya's dreaming, and then I believe that Nymeria is killing some Frey troops and Boltons. That always felt right that they would reunite.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that would be a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
And why I don't essentially agree that Arya's plot is ruined. She's got so many more interesting things to do. Christina T. says, I was rewatching episode 8 and had a question about the Brienne-Jamie scene. When Brienne is explaining why Sansa wants the Blackfish, she says it's to help Sansa reclaim her ancestral throne. At this point, Jamie has learned that Sansa is alive, and he's also gotten information about what she plans to do and where she'll be. I can't imagine that informing Jaime about Bolton's betrayal would put Sansa at any more risk than she's already in. Let's pause there. Do you agree with that statement? Because my
first
thought...
Can't imagine that it... What? Can't imagine that it won't?
Well,
can't imagine that it will?
I don't think we talked about this enough, probably in the non-spoiler podcast, but Jaime, you know... Brienne was talking about Sansa and wanting to retake Winterfell,
right.
And Jaime kind of wryly observes, well, good for her, but she's still wanted by my sister for the, you know, murder of blah, blah, blah. That does seem like it puts her in more danger.
Yeah, gives a little too much information away, I think.
Yeah, like, I don't know what Jaime does with that, but he's got a real conflict of interest between his loyalty to Brienne and his love for his sister.
Yeah.
Now, he could just be like, well, my sister's being a little crazy about this, but I don't know. I feel like that, yes, there is one more baleful glare that's upon her that wasn't on her, you know, before Brienne opened her big mouth.
Yeah.
She continues, in fact, I can imagine Cersei asking Jaime to move the army up to the north to straighten out the Boltons, i.e. put another lord in charge. At least there could have been some tactical advantage to letting the Lannisters and Boltons battle it out and then use the wildlings to clean house. Do you guys have any clear thoughts on this? I don't think Cersei is going to ask Jaime to move up to the north and do shit.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
Like, if the Boltons mismanage it, maybe once they get King's Landing under their control. But again, if you go with the funeral pyre theory of King's Landing, I don't think that Cersei's going to recover from this.
Right. I need to really see kind of how the stuff with the High Sparrow plays out before I can make any predictions beyond that for King's Landing.
I know. It's like our prediction timelines are at odds. There's not like one clear narrative here. There's competing narratives.
Yeah, and I can't see. I've got like an event horizon where I just can't see beyond the wildfire event or the trial by combat that's not going to happen. You know, the trial that Cersei's going to have.
Yeah.
So I don't feel super comfortable with speculating on the intentions of King's Landing after that, because I don't know who's going to be in charge.
Yeah.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move. Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question: who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. The first two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV+, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Doug L. says, I thought it would be worth discussing Arya's possible future based on the Winds of Winter preview chapters released. In it, she's embedded in a theater company, so presumably the show will use them as a vehicle to get to Westeros and potentially around it once there. This might have some cool applications. First, she could learn to use a number of mummer's tricks from them, not only disguise, but stage illusions, which would add to her bag of tricks. More importantly, the theater troupe is a great cover, allowing her to slip in and out of highly guarded or critical places with the performances.
And wear big funny noses, too.
Sure.
I mean, she's faceless. She can actually change her face, or she can just put a funny nose on and a wig.
Yeah. So this leads to my theory about what she does. Gurm, like Tolkien before him, is a fan of Shakespeare, so I imagine he couldn't help but pull a version of the play scene in Hamlet. Hamlet has a company of actors perform a play about the murder of his father in front of his uncle, who actually committed the crime. Hamlet watches the uncle's reaction to performance to confirm his suspicion that he was indeed the culprit. Here, Arya would be performing in a play about the murder of Ned Stark, and she could be doing it in front of Cersei and the entire King's Landing elite. It'd be a perfect moment for Arya to both reveal the Tommen's incestuous birth and for Arya to take out Cersei directly. And how to fulfill the prophecy, perhaps because of her small stature, Arya plays the role of Tyrion in the show. Ooh. I like this. Here's the problems with it. Number one, it really smacks against the face of the King's Landing funeral pyre wildfire theory.
Sure.
Number two, we've already had a full scene of the Globe Theater, a full season of the Globe Theater.
Right.
I don't know how much more I want to see of it. It was a cute trick, and it's nice to play within the play. But for them to do this, you know, the play's the thing, to catch the king kind of thing, I don't know.
I mean, I guess if they can make it clear that she's joining up with the troop for the express purpose of getting into King's Landing unnoticed and exacting revenge, maybe I could go along with it. Like, you know, she picked up something in Essos that she can now use in Westeros.
Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah, I don't want to see her just, like, for no real reason, just kind of fall in with a troop of actors.
And the other thing is, I feel like that the double D's have given us the wink and the nod to the Mercy storyline by having Arya express interest in being an actress and calling her Mercy, and I feel like that's usually when they wink at us like that, they're not gonna do it.
Okay.
So that's why I feel like this pissing in the river on, you know, Kat's forehead is them essentially saying, stop it with this Lady Stoneheart nonsense. I don't know. But yeah, it's a cool idea. I guess I'm really repping this wildfire theory. There's just too much. It's the only one that makes sense of what Bran foresaw, that acknowledges the foreshadowing of Jaime saying that she'll burn cities to ash, and
it feels like a way out for Cersei, whether she lives or not.
Now that the trial by combat is taken from her, it does feel like, and it's also it harkens back to the Blackwater season 2, where she was ready to murder her children and herself to keep them from facing what she considered a worse fate.
And it truly is an act of desperation, right? I mean, and one that maybe she doesn't even expect to survive. Maybe it's just more of an act of spite, but she feels more and more backed into a corner. There's nowhere she can run now. She has to do something insane and drastic, and this could be it.
Now, the contra of that is that Cersei at the end in Blackwater was facing a Baratheon army that was convinced that her children were born of incest and they were pretenders to the throne and would probably be killed just from a you can't leave any claimants to the throne left alive theory.
Uh-huh.
Whereas here, it's much more nakedly selfish. Like,
sure.
I might be punished and lose my power, but you're probably going to live. But you're not going to live like a Lannister. Like, I guess maybe is that a fate worse than death for her? That if she's killed and he never knows that he's actually a Lannister and he becomes this tool of the High Septon, like, is that what she would consider a fate worse than death? Like, that's not even who he really supposed to be. It's like he's a zombie child at this point.
Right, could be.
I mean, that's super selfish and narcissistic, but that's also Cersei Lannister.
Yeah.
Okay, James P. There's another little meta conversation. I think this is it for the day. He says, could it be that without the actual book to frame the season, that the writers are struggling to fill in the gaps? In several episodes this season, the dialogue has been stilted and flat-out bad. Scenes with Tyrion trying to tell jokes or the scenes with the Hound and the Brotherhood hanging Lemon Cloak. In my opinion, just atrocious writing. In fact, Dinklage has been giving nothing but crap to work with this whole season so far. Point being, much of the writing has sucked, and some great stuff that could have been pulled right from the books, including Septon's Maribald's broken man speech, Jaime and the Blackfish, etc., has been left out. I feel like they did justice to Jaime and the Blackfish, honestly. But, and you know, they did win a different direction to the Septon, but it's, you know, obviously, that's a great piece of literature there. Could it be that the rift between Dave and Dan and Germ has become such that they just want to get this thing done? Could their disappointment at not having another book to work from and his displeasure with them spoiling significant parts of the story before he could get the book out have created a situation where everyone just wants it to be done? Some of the season has felt so rushed and half-assed that it makes me feel like they just want to get it over with. Even the acting performances and attitudes of the actors and interviews seems to indicate that everyone involved has just become a little bit sick of this process and eager to get out from under it. It's too bad for us as fans. We may never get the story completed in the books, and the finale on television is starting to feel mailed in. So this is the most pessimistic of the takes I got this week.
Yeah,
And
pretty pessimistic.
And I do want to take issue. I don't think there's bad blood between the Double D's and Germ. I feel like there's some just being bummed out all around.
Yeah.
But, and I don't know. I can't speak for the Double D's, but I've gotten to know Germ through his blog and whatnot enough to know that he's a pretty thoughtful guy.
Yeah.
And I think he's aware that this is not the Double D's fault. Like, they got contracts, they got deadlines, the show literally must go on. It cannot stop, it cannot be put on hiatus. Like, he understands the realities. He started in television writing. He's still a television writer to this day.
Uh-huh.
So I don't think there's animosity. Now, there could be some real disappointment in the Double D's. I know they've said publicly that we are kind of over this.
Yeah.
And
looking
I've always
forward to doing something new.
I've always interpreted that as just like that this is a grind. They never get days off. Like, they essentially shoot, they essentially write, then they shoot, then they post-production. And as soon as the show is over airing, like even before then, this process starts right back up again.
Yep.
And while they were like kind of fanboys like us, like, oh man, we're going to get to do Ned's beheading and it's not going to be crazy. And then we're going to get to do the Red Wedding and Blackwater and oh my God, Hardhome. I bet it is a bit of a bummer to be like, wow, we are now having to kind of do the hard stuff that Martin doesn't want to do. He's got the same bullet points we do. And we're going to have to actually fucking do it and film it now.
Yeah.
And the whole step of the way, the fans are going to be like, oh, I bet Martin's going to do it better. I bet that is a huge bummer.
Yeah, it probably is. And it, I don't know, when I think about my life personally, there's nothing that I've really been wholly satisfied with for a decade or longer, right?
Sure.
I mean, those monumental undertakings like that just sap you of some of your enjoyment of the thing by the end of it. So, like, I can see where they're coming from, saying, look, we wish we could kind of get out from under this, and maybe they are taking some shortcuts. If that's the case, honestly, I would say bring in some fresh writers maybe toward the end of that. Like, I know you can't bring in all fresh writers, but bring in a couple new perspectives and say, hey, maybe they can add some energy to this.
Yeah.
Help hold this torch up just a little bit.
Yeah.
Because we're all getting tired. But and maybe they've done that over the years. I don't know. But I have heard them say they're kind of over this and would like to move on to something new. So, and honestly, I don't think it's been shit writing.
No.
I think there have been moments where I'm like, wow, that was kind of bad. Like the Arya stuff this week.
And I think there's a lot of this disappointment is an overreaction from this week's episode. And a part of this week's episode to boot.
Yeah, and I do think there have been some sort of clunky scenes with Tyrion and Varys and Grey Worm and Missandei and stuff like that. And Dorne, we know, has been historically not great. But I don't think it's been of the caliber of a lot of real bad shows on TV.
Oh, God, no.
So, like, to say it's bad, I guess I don't actually agree with that.
This year?
Right. That's shit.
That's a train wreck.
Right, so I guess I don't totally agree with the sentiment there, but I do understand like some of the frustration with we're still on board as fans, right?
Yeah,
more so than ever in a lot of ways, and to have like the writing not be just getting better and better as we approach these more like climactic and interesting aspects of the show and the books, like that kind of sucks.
But I feel like that. Jamie the Blackfish was perfect. Jamie and Edmure was perfect. I feel like I was really rewarded on that. And I think the season as a whole has been better than I was expecting, clearly. I was really worried that this would be the year that Game of Thrones falls off. And I don't think that's going to happen. And I think the next two seasons episodes are going to be exciting enough to have everybody be like, what the fuck, and back on board.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, it is kind of a bummer for any kind of fan you want to be, and for the author and for the Double D's, like it's it's probably not great. And I do think that if you look at the past two seasons, it does feel like that compared to the first four, things have definitely slowed down. Now, they're skillful, and I mean, that's maybe if we look at it this way, like, it's kind of impressive that they've been able to essentially keep the show in stasis for 2 years and still have it be compelling.
Okay.
Because I, you know, it could very well be that, like, they could have gone further if they were just going to... Because I think initially they wanted to be done in seven seasons. Now they've got this dragged out to 7.5 seasons, and maybe they decided to, like, well, we're going to invent 5 or 6 episodes worth of stuff and kind of put it on... Because maybe George will get the Winds of Winter and we can go back to adapting him to fanboys. But the other thing is, as I've been saying for, like, 5 years now, Feast and Dragons is not that great if you compare it to the first three books. Hmm. Like, yes, you can get a greater appreciation and there's a lot more political nuance and blah, but it's not, it definitely lost a sense of urgency and page turningness of the first two. And again, I don't really care if you disagree or agree with me. This is my opinion as a legit fan that got to Feast and couldn't even fucking make it through and started skipping to, like, okay, where to an Arya. Okay, here's an Arya. I need to find a Brienne. Like, I just, a lot of that shit I didn't care about. And it's not great for me if I'm contemplating a reread to now know when I get to a Doran or an Arianne or a fucking Aryo Hota chapter that this is all going to be bullshit.
Right.
You know, that this is going to really not amount to a hill of beans in the Game of Thrones universe. So,
yeah,
I think that there was definitely this giant, you know, the middle is always the hardest part to write. And, you know, the end might be kick ass. But honestly, if you're grading on a curve, I feel like they've done a pretty good job of adapting just unwieldy messes of books into something that's still coherent and compelling. And also trying to give George time to wrap up the Winds of Winter so they can, you know, hopefully get on with it. I'm, you know, that's the other thing. I'm not looking forward to, if the Winds of Winter does come out, the ensuing debates about which is better.
Oh, of course.
You know? And yeah, that's what are you going to do? So that is the, you know, hopefully that wasn't terribly boring. The meta commentary in this episode, and that's about all I got to say this week. Obviously, if you got more feedback, you can send it into Game of Thrones at baldmove.com or discuss stuff on the forums, where we just got tons of threads all the time talking about theories and whatnot, and just how you feel about the show. We'll be back this weekend. Battle of the Bastards, I feel like, is probably going to deliver.
It has to, right? How can it not?
I mean, there's a lot of ways it couldn't, but boy, I don't look forward to hosting the podcast if it doesn't.
Sure. So, and I guess it depends on what you're in it for. I'm in it for some good old fighting.
Yeah.
A good spirited battle.
Is it fair to say that my real sole expectation is something decisive?
Yeah.
Like, maybe it ends with, I was talking to someone in email this week about, surely they didn't bring Jon back from the dead and Sansa out of the clutches of Ramsay just to have their heads mounted on pikes.
Yeah.
At the end of
that would shock me.
It's definitely in Game of Thrones wheelhouse, but again, you know, what is Martin playing at? What is the arc of his story? If it doesn't start pulling out of despair and futility, then I'm going to start thinking that, oh boy, this is just going to be a bad scene altogether. And again, I'm granting that they're going to torch King's Landing and everyone in it. Okay. Can I get a little glimpse of sunlight? So I'm wanting something decisive, and if that means Jon and Sansa are heads on spikes, fine. If that means that Ramsay is utterly beaten and broken and the house and the North is united behind Jon, but I don't want something inconclusive.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So I don't want a Stannis battle where, yeah, it's but okay, what now what? There was a battle, but that was decisive too, but it didn't really, I mean, decisive plot terms.
Yeah, I guess as long as somebody wins this battle and it's not postponed, that's decisive for the North. I feel like these are kind of the last two forces that are ready to clash up there, unless you want to say there's this, you know, uprising in the North that we haven't been privy to yet.
Yeah.
Like there kind of is in the books, then I guess that could be an ensuing battle later on. But I mean, whoever wins this kind of has at least temporary, for, you know, for a good long while, control of the North now.
Yeah.
So,
and we've already seen the Starks get their ass kicked.
You know, a lot of times, yeah.
I don't know, that would feel a little bit treadmilly too, to have, like, you know, John rising up with the sister and getting all these forces, and then it's his Stark ass getting kicked part three.
Yeah.
You know, bigger, better, bloodier, less skin, more flaying. All right, so that's the podcast. We'll be back Sunday night for the instant take. Hopefully it's jubilant, it's joyous, it's victorious, it's triumphant instant take for Battle of the Bastards. And then, of course, back on the schedule for Tuesday with the full cast, and next Friday for the spoiler cast. Till then, have a great weekend. I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim. See ya.
Hey, everybody. I want to talk about the club and how you can support us at club.baldmove.com. It's easy. You go to that website. You can see the pitch. You can see the features that you're going to get. I'll tell you about them briefly now. Ad-free feeds, extra content. We do weekly bonus video shows that we also release as podcasts where people can ask us questions and we give them answers. And we just talk about all kinds of different stuff. Sometimes it's television. Sometimes it's video games. Sometimes it's just life events. We got Quip, which is a humorous fictional show where Jim and I pitch ideas for how we want television and movies to be. There is a video game playthroughs, like we just got through with the last episode of the Game of Thrones Telltale video game playthrough, which people seem to really like. And you can view the first episode of that for free on our YouTube site. But the bottom line is it helps us do the things we do here. Like, if you haven't noticed, we've been putting out three podcasts a week on Game of Thrones. When we were at full-time jobs, we got one out. And it was out late. So the only way we can do what we do and the things that make people enjoy us is by having the freedom financially and time-wise to give it the time and attention it deserves. And the way we do that is by far the biggest avenue of support we get financially is our club sales. We try to keep it reasonable. It's $1 a month if you sign up for a year, $2 a month if you do it monthly. And you know, we're not asking to get rich. We're just asking to get by. Note on that, because the traffic has just insanely increased for this Game of Thrones season. Like, at the start of the season, we doubled our server capacity to prepare for it, and it was smashed like a giant against a cold rolled steel gate. And then we've doubled it and done more performance, and we still, like, the fact is, like, our traffic is essentially quintupled over last year. Side effect of that is on peak times like Sunday night and Tuesday around podcast release, our website cannot process payments. It just says, no, fuck you, 404, I'm tired. So I've seen a lot of people try to, like, you know, they get the itch. They want to see the instant cast after a big podcast, and they go to sign up on Sunday night, and it can't get it done. So the early bird gets the worm.
Yeah.
The early bird gets his credit card processed.
Saturday's a pretty good day for processing credit cards on our website.
Or Wednesdays. Or PayPal. Mondays. Payments. Just not Sunday nights or Tuesday afternoons. But unfortunately, that's when everybody thinks, like, oh shit, we see it's going live and we want to watch it.
Yeah.
We're trying to work on this, but, you know, $1 a month only gets you so far. And we're trying to get the hamster to just run a little bit faster. Apologize for anyone. I mean, I hate it that people want to give us money and sometimes they can't. But if you go right now, theclub.baldmove.com, excellent chance that you will get through and get signed up.